ตัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะอัปปาริทาเตสังอมัตตสทาวราเยสุรวันธาบะมุจันตุสดัง
So this is the first day of February, and the first month has passed. So this is reflection on time, of month and the years and so forth. These are perceptions that we tend to believe in and cling to. So on a conventional level, we easily conceive the conditions that we attach to. So sati panya, sati sampajanya, we begin to awaken ourselves to the way it is rather than commitment to the conventional realities. Like in this terms of this, again emphasizing the awareness before you become something. And then it's trying to make this point, get this point across, so I think it has to be repeated many times because even though it's very simple, yet the mindset is definitely to believe in the personality view as your reality. And that most of you are very committed to yourselves as personalities. And that the reality of yourself as a person is very much, ingrained. So this sakkaya ditti, this term sakkaya ditti, we can translate as personality view or the ego. It means that the perceptions that we hold as in regards to our identity with the five khandhas, with the body, with the feelings, perceptions, conceptions, consciousness. Regarding it in terms of a personal, as belonging to this person. So in investigating this, it's not a grasping a perception of no person either. We can take the concept of anatta and grasp that and say there's no self because the Buddha said there's anatta, and then we're also grasping a perception. So if you're grasping a perception of yourself or yourself is a non-self, then it gets to be a bit ridiculous. So obviously, grasping perception is not the way. There's no, whatever you grasp, conditions you create, and you grasp that, you'll end up in the same place, suffering as a result. But don't believe me either. I mean, this is for you to explore. So instead of starting with a perception or a conception of anything, the Buddha established the way through awareness. through awakened attention. So that's an imminent act in the present. You can grasp the idea of awakened attention, and repeat that over and over again. But the simple act of paying attention is all that's necessary. So when there is this attention, sati, sampajanyana, intuitive awareness, the mind is, the consciousness then is with this present moment. It's this way. And so, beginning to just explore sakyaditti in terms of the perceptions that you regard and you're attached to as yourself. So that's why I keep emphasizing this. Deliberately conceive yourself as a person. I'm this person who's got to practice in order to become enlightened. So just take something like that. I'm an unenlightened person who has come here to Amaravati in order to practice meditation so that I will become enlightened. An enlightened person in the future. Or an enlightened non-person in the future. So, you can have comments about this, form perceptions about these perceptions, but that's not the point, isn't it? It's to if you deliberately think this, I am an unenlightened person, deliberately, say that to yourself, but with the attention, like listening, being able to just listen to yourself think. So this deliberate thinking allows us to listen to ourselves think. When you're caught in a wandering mind, you lose yourself. You go from one thought to another, and so one thought connects to another thought, and you just get carried away. But deliberate thinking isn't like wandering thinking, is it? It's quite intentional, deliberate. You're choosing what you're going to think, too. You can choose whatever you want to think. But the important thing is not the thought, not even the quality of the thought, if it's a stupid or intelligent or right or wrong thought, it's not really important. It's the attention, the ability to listen to thinking that you're deliberately doing. So when you set yourself up like this, and what happens to me, and I assume that this will happen to you also, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just an exceptional case. But before I start thinking I am an unenlightened person, there's a space, isn't there? There's an empty pause before you deliberately think. So notice that's just the way it is. There's no perception in that space, but there's attention to it, isn't there? There's awareness. You're certainly aware of this before I am an enlightened person arises. So just now thinking about this isn't wandering thinking. It's not judging or analyzing, but just noticing. It's like this. So when you deliberately think, then you can also use thought to keep pointing to this, noticing the way it is. And then the pronoun I am an unenlightened person. And so you listen to that, and then and you realize that those are words that go through the consciousness. That you're deliberately, you're creating that. That's a, and that you're actually creating yourself with those words. I am an unenlightened person. So that which is aware of your thinking, is that, what is that? Is that a person? Is it a person that is aware, or is it pure awareness? So this is exploring, you know, kind of investigating. This awareness, is it personal? Is it a, or does the person arise in that? So you're by investigating, you're actually getting to notice the way it is. The Dhamma, that there's actually no person that's aware, but awareness will include what seems personal. I am an unenlightened person and I need to practice meditation in order to become an enlightened person in the future. And so, you know, one assumes that I am this body, this, with this past, this, I have a history. You know, I'm so many years old, was born in such and such a place, and I've done all these things and all that, so I have a history to prove that this person exists. Passport, birth certificate, some people even want me to have a website on the internet. So it's a really but really, there doesn't seem to be any person in the awareness. You know, I find. The more I am aware, the less my personal past, and that seems so totally unimportant, insignificant, and of no interest whatsoever. Doesn't mean anything, actually. It's just, you know, a few memories and that you can churn up. But yet, taking it from the personal view, if I get caught in myself, thinking of myself as a real personality, then suddenly I find my past, you know, as something important, you know, an identity. It gives me a sense of I am a person, I have a past, I am somebody, I am, you know, somebody important or somebody. That may be not terribly important, but at least I feel that I'm connected to something in the past. I have a home. I have a heritage. People talk about losing their sense of their identity now because they're refugees or their parents are dead or they're orphans or they're mixed racial mixtures, or they don't have any real clear identity of themselves as belonging to something in the past, a family, an ethnic background, a group. So the sense of a personality depends very much on, you know, like proving that you are, you know, if you've got to be somebody, prove you are somebody. Your education, your class, your race, your accomplishments or lack of accomplishments. Whether you're an interesting or a not very interesting person, important or unimportant, very important person, or very unimportant person. And then now you see in the news all the way people emphasize themselves. Is Pinochet in Chile now, this old guy is 85 years old. They're going to try him for being a war criminal and a murderer. You know, he doesn't have any peace. Everywhere where he was here in England, when they captured him here in Britain, kept him a year. They finally got rid of him, sent him back to Chile, and now they're doing it there. And because of his personality is so famous, isn't it? He's got a real past to deal with. And a lot of identification with all kinds of things. So not having any person, not being any person. Now, like with meditation, we're not trying to deny personality. It's not we're not trying to convince ourselves we're non-people, grasping ideas of I have no nationality, I have no sex, I have no class, I have no race. I'm the pure Dhamma is my true identity. Is still another identity, isn't it? No, that's not it. It's not grasping the concepts of no self. But it's in realizing, in noting, in through awakened attention, the way things really are. So just in this simple exercise, I am an unenlightened person. You know, so it's quite deliberate. Or you can say, I'm an enlightened person. Whatever, you can choose whatever. You want to be enlightened or unenlightened. Most of us don't dare to go around saying we're enlightened, do we? So it's safer to go around saying, I'm an unenlightened person. Because if somebody says, I'm an enlightened person, somebody's going to challenge you. And you don't look very enlightened to me. But anyway, whatever is fair enough. I'm an unenlightened person, or I'm an enlightened person, or I'm an enlightened non-person, or I'm an unenlightened non-person. But the words aren't really important, but it's the attention. So I found this very revealing to me. This made it very clear when I did this exercise, what awareness is. Sati sampajanya, mindfulness, awareness, apperception, and that then the thinking, the perceptions arise. No, so I'm deliberately thinking, I am an unenlightened person. That arises in this awareness. This awareness isn't a perception, is it? It's an apperception. Which means that it includes perception. Perceptions arise and cease. It's not personal. It has no, you can't say it has it hasn't any kind of Ajahn Sumedho quality to it, or is a male or female, or bhikkhu or siladhar, anything like that. It has no quality of on the conventional level, on the condition level. So it's like no thing, it's like nothing. This is this awareness, I am an unenlightened person, and then another, there's nothing left of person. So you're exploring these, you're investigating these gaps before I and after I. You say, I. There's Sati Sampajanya, there's the sound of silence, isn't there? Am. And so I am arise in this, in this awareness. This consciousness, So that, as you investigate it, then you can question, you know, ask, this awareness isn't created, isn't it? It's not a creation that I'm creating the, I'm creating that. But what is more real than I am an unenlightened person is this awareness, isn't it? This sati sampajanya. That's the continuous one. That's what sustains, and the sense of yourself as a person can go any which way. And then as you think about yourself and who you are and who you should be and like to be or don't want to be, or how good or bad or wonderful or horrible you are. All this whirls around. It goes all over the place. One moment you can feel I'm really wonderful person, the next moment you can feel I'm absolutely hopeless, horrible person. But the awareness, if you take refuge in awareness, then that, whatever you're thinking doesn't make much difference because that's your refuge, is in the stability of awareness rather than in the gyrations and fluctuations of the self-view of your Sakyaditi habit. Now just notice how, you know, being a person is really, you know, it's like a yo-yo. It just goes up and down all the time. You know, the praise, you feel you're wonderful, you're happy, you're a hopeless case, you're depressed, you're a helpless victim of circumstances. You win the lottery, you're elated, and then somebody steals all your money and you're depressed, suicidal. And then, this is because the personality is, like that. It's very dependent, you know. You can be hurt terribly on a personal level. And then you can be exhilarated. You know, somebody, you find, people find you just the most wonderful, thrilling, exciting personality, and you feel happy. I was watching my personality operate and telling the monks the other day about when I was a young monk and I used to pride myself on how well I kept the Vinaya. That I was really, really good with Vinaya, and I really understood it, and I was very strict. And then I went out to stay on this island off the coast of Siraja, Gok Sichang, and the monk out there, I stayed with it for a while with this monk on this island, and then he told somebody else later that I didn't keep very good Vinaya. I wanted to murder him. So even Vinaya, you see, you know, can be, you know, another form of, you know, the self-view. How good a monk am I? And then somebody says, "Your Rajan Sumedho is really exemplary, top-notch monk." That's wonderful. And he says he's a hopeless monk, doesn't keep good Vinaya, want to murder, like. So this is just how untrustworthy the self is, isn't it? I mean, we can rise to great altruism and then sink to the most depraved depths in just a second. So it's a totally untrustworthy state to put your refuge in being a person of any kind. Even the holding the view of I'm a good monk, isn't it? It's a pretty dodgy refuge. Because if that's all you know, then that can, you know, somebody says you're not a good monk, you're angry or you're hurt, you're offended. But the Sati Sampajanya, in spite of all the fluctuations, is a constant. Mm-hmm. And as we, and this is why I say see it as a refuge. As you recognize it, realize it, know it, and appreciate it, then it is what I call the refuge. It's Buddha Dhamma Sangha. It's Bhutang Saranang Gacchami. It's Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. And it's Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Because this is a refuge isn't dependent on praise and blame or success or failure or whatever. In learning to stop the thinking mind, like the Zen koan or this self-inquiry practice, like who am I, these kind of methods that you find in various, like in Zen or in Advaita Vedanta or whatever, where they have these are techniques or expedient means to stop the thinking mind. So you begin to notice the pure state of attention, pure consciousness, where you're not caught in thinking and in the assumptions of a self. Or there's just pure awareness. So you notice that's when you hear the nada, sound of silence. Because your mind is just in that state of attention. There's no self. Like this. And then to learn to relax into that, to trust it. Not try to hold on to it as some kind of, you know, we can't even grasp the idea of that. You've got to get the sound of silence and you've got to relax into it and grasp that. So this is the dodgy part of any kind of technique or instruction, because people, it's so easy to grasp the ideas. So this is where, like, bhavana or this cultivation or meditation isn't grasping ideas or coming from any position, but in this what they call bhatibhata or practice or recognizing, realizing, awakening, through awakened awareness, through a direct knowing. Now, some people experience a lot of when the self starts beginning to break up. Sometimes it's very frightening for people, because it's like everything you kind of regarded as real and solid is kind of falling apart. You know, the whole, remember years ago in, long before I was even a Buddhist, feeling threatened by certain radical ideas that tended to threaten the security of the world that I lived in. And so you felt somebody who was challenging or threatening something that you depended on for a sense of feeling everything's all right, when you thought you really could get very angry and very even violent because they were like threatening your world, my security, my refuge. So you can see why conservative people or that get very threatened by anything like foreigners or anything, radical ideas or anything that comes in and challenges the status quo or what you're used to. Because if that's your world that you're really depending on to make you feel secure, well, when that's threatened, you go into panic. And it's just you go into a state of panic. And reading about this earthquake in Gujarat, you know, just the last week where they it's a horrible earthquake. They think maybe 100,000 people have been killed, and one of the stories is it just happened out of nowhere one morning. You know, these people were like they're saying some schoolgirls were wearing their school uniforms and marching. Practice marching on the school ground for some kind of parade festivity they were engaging in, and the merchants were putting out their wares in their shops, you know, arranging things for the day, getting ready for just the normal average day, and then suddenly, within 5 minutes, these girls were all dead. They'd just been completely killed through falling masonry, and the shops and all the whole town of 25,000 was completely demolished within 5 minutes. Just out of nowhere. Well, think how that would do to your jit if that. That was really frightening. To think how, you know, what a dodgy realm we really live in, this planet Earth. You know, when you explore even what's really going on in this planet, it looks pretty unsafe. Even though it looks solid, isn't it, in terms of we go out and look and, you know, it looks pretty, you know, safe and take it for granted. But then, last week in Gujarat, the people there, what seemed, you know, like a solid, safe environment suddenly out of nowhere, just an earthquake and the whole thing collapsed on top of them. Well, we recognize even without earthquakes how easily just physically, you know, we could have a heart attack or brain hemorrhage or be hit by a car or whatever, spaceship. On the flight path from Luton, the plane could crash. So, in terms of this realm, this, you know, in terms of the conditioned realm that we perceive and create and hold to, it is very unstable, uncertain, changing, undependable condition in itself, you know, so that's just the way it is. And the Buddha pointed to the instability of the conditioned phenomena, the impermanence. All conditions are impermanent. So this isn't just a kind of philosophy that he was, you know, expecting us to go along with, but when we explore and see the nature of the conditioned realm, In just the way that we experience it, the physical, the emotional, the mental. But that which is aware of it, you see, the refuge is in this awakened awareness rather than in trying to find or create a condition that will give us some a sense of security. We're not trying to fool ourselves or create a false sense of security by positive thinking or nice thinking or whatever, but an awakened to reality, because the unconditioned is reality. So in terms of the unconditioned, this awareness, awakenedness is the gate to that, to the unconditioned. When we awaken, then that's the unconditioned, the actual awakenedness is that. And then the conditions are whatever they are. You know, it can be strong or weak or pleasant or painful or whatever. So I'm getting back to, I am an unenlightened person who must practice meditation hard. I must really work at it and get rid of my defilements and become an enlightened person sometime in the future. I hope to attain stream entry before I die. But if I don't attain stream entry, I hope I will be born in a better realm. And then we go on like that. Just make an endless... we create more and more complications. And then people ask me, can we attain screen entry at this time? Are there any arahants? Because we still think of stream entry and arahantship as a personal quality, don't we? We see it as some kind of, like we look at somebody and they say, that monk over there is an arahant. We think of that person is an arahant. Well, that person is a stream enterer. That's just the way the conditioned mind operates. It can't help it. It can't do anything else but that. But so you can't trust it. You can't take your refuge in your thoughts or your perceptions, but in the awareness. So that doesn't seem like anything, you know, like nothing. But then it's everything, you know. That all the problems are resolved there. but your conditioned mind thinks it's nothing. Doesn't amount to anything. Not worth anything. You couldn't sell it. So this is where it's learning to trust in your ability to awaken, to be that, to be awake. And so this is because, you know, when you think about it, then you'll start doubting it all the time. You know, am I really awake? Am I awake enough? Or maybe I need to be asleep longer so I can be awake later on. Or maybe if I keep, you know, practicing with ignorance, I'll get so fed up, I'll give it up. But I'm often thinking, how could ignorance ever, you know, if you start with ignorance, how can you ever end up with wisdom? And to me, that just doesn't make any sense. you know, like hitting your head on a wall. And, you know, then after a while you give it up, maybe, if you haven't damaged your brain. And it does feel good when you stop, doesn't it? Feels better anyway. But instead of looking at it in that way, it's trust in this simple act of attention. And then, explore. You know, have confidence in your ability to use wisdom. Now, so if you think, you know, probably many of you think, oh, I don't have any wisdom. I'm nobody. I haven't had any real insights. So then you thoroughly convince yourself that you can't do this. Because, that's the way it seems. On the personal level, maybe you don't feel that you have anything to offer on that level. But recognize that's another creation, and that's the same as I am an unenlightened person. And that's you creating that, you know, that whatever you think you are, you know, whether it's arrogant, think you're the best, the greatest, or the worst, it's still a creation. It's your creation. You create that into the present. Whatever assumptions you have about yourself, no matter how reasonable they might be, or based on facts and all that kind of thing, it's still a creation of the present. When you awaken, you create that. In other words, you by believing it, by thinking that and holding to it, then you're continually creating yourself as a person, some kind of personality. So then the awakenedness is not a creation, it's just the imminent act of attention in the present. And that's why to develop this I am an unenlightened person, this deliberate thinking is just a skillful means, you know, to really notice more carefully, more continuously what it's like to just be mindful, pure attention, pure awareness, with at the same time that you're creating yourself in whatever way you want to do it, as a person. So you get this sense that your self-view is definitely a mental object, isn't it? It comes and goes. You can't sustain, I am an unenlightened person. How do you sustain that one? Have to think that all the time? You know, it sends you to the mental hospital all the time. You're going around, I'm an unenlightened person. To sustain that? No, you have to, it keeps, you know, it has its, it arises and ceases. But the awareness, sustainable, isn't it? And that awareness is not created, it's not personal, but it's real. It's reality. Practice also recognize that the ending, that when I am an unenlightened person and I've come here to practice in order to become enlightened in the future, stop. Then there's the ringing silence, there's awareness. So that conditions arise and cease always now in the present. The cessation is now. The ending of the condition is now. The end of the world is now. The end of self is now. The end of suffering is now. So you can see the arising, you know, where you, I am, and then, and the ending, and what remains when something has arisen, has begun, and ended, is the awareness still is like this. It's pure. It's like never. It's alive. It's not like in a trance or a dull, it's not dull, it's not stupid. Bright, it's clear. So, this is encouragement. This is an empowerment, modern jargon of the day. it's like saying, do it, you know, go for it. Don't just hang around on the edges thinking I'm an enlightened person and I've got to practice really hard in order to become an enlightened person, and then at the end of March thinking, well, you know, I work hard, and sometimes, and then you get into, I need more time, and I need, and then we've got to, and then we go into our usual, you know, plans and plots and views and opinions around what we're going to do and meditation and so forth. So, if one starts with ignorance, you end up with suffering. Avijja bhajya sankhara in the paticca samuppada. And avijja is ignorance, and then that conditions the sankharas, and that affects everything. You end up with dukkha pariteva dukkha tomana upayasa. Grief, sorrow, despair, and anguish as a result. So this is encouraging you to start not from avijja, but from vijja, or from awareness, from paññā, from wisdom. Be that wisdom itself, rather than a person who isn't wise, who's trying to become wise. You see what I mean? As long as you hold to that view, I'm not wise yet, but I hope to become wise, then you'll end up with grief, sorrow, despair, and anguish. So it's that direct. It's learning to trust in being the wisdom now, being awake, even though emotionally you may feel totally inadequate or doubtful or uncertain or frightened or terrified of it. Emotions are like that, but be the awareness of the emotion too. The emotion is like this. It's a reaction, because emotionally we're conditioned for ignorance. I'm emotionally conditioned to be a person. I'm conditioned to be Ajahn Sumedho emotionally. And so emotionally, you know, Ajahn Sumedho, you're wonderful. The emotions, you're, whoop. And then emotionally conditioned, Ajahn Sumedho, you're horrible. Horrible monk with terrible vinaya. So emotions are like that. If my security depends on being praised and loved and and respected and appreciated and being successful and being healthy and everything going nicely and everybody in harmony and the world around me just being so utterly sensitive to my needs. And then my emotions are, you know, I feel all right when that's going on, when everything seems all right. And then it goes the other way. The earthquake, the disrobing, the blame, a persecution, abuse, criticism, and emotion. Oh, life is horrible. I can't stand it anymore. And I can't bear it. I'm so hurt. I'm so wounded by the fact that you know, I've tried so hard and nobody appreciates, nobody loves me. So that's the emotional dependency on the person. You know, that's personal conditioning. In the awareness, awareness includes those emotions. Those emotions then are mental objects rather than the subject. Where if you don't know this, then you tend to identify with the emotion, and your emotions become yourself. You become this emotional thing that's terribly upset because the world isn't respecting you enough. But if you trust in the awareness, then the self and the emotions about oneself, whatever they might be, can be seen in terms of what they are. Not judged, we're not making any problem about them, we're just noting that they're like this. Because our refuge is in the deathless reality rather than in the transient, changing, unstable condition. So I offer this as a reflection for this evening. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato.